Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered Live. For those watching on YouTube, hello. For those listening, welcome. I'm Menas. I'm with Paul, of course. Jaleesa is going to join us when she hits the link, whenever that is. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, good, Menas. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. I heard you on another show yesterday called Behind the Podcast, and you were being interviewed about Cricket Daily, and the host had heard me start the show out you once. You said it was like a subtle hint that, you know, don't be late, and you're exactly right. That was the hint. I think if we say we're going to go live at 11, it should be around 11.
I don't recall using the word subtle.
I may have added that in.
I think you did. But I've never been late since, have I?
No. I actually don't mind going live solo, but anyway, you know, we're going live because we want to talk about the Ashes squad. Also, I want to reflect on Australia's World Cup win. And now we're joined by the wonderful Jaleesa Apps from Channel 10, who's hasn't quite worked out. There we go. Had her sideways for a second there. Good morning, Jaleesa. How are you?
Oh, my God. I just ran so fast to try and find a quiet spot, and now I think I'm going to pass out. I'm seeing stars. I've never run in my life. Actually, I probably ran at school.
Just take suck into big ones. This must have been a chastening experience for you this week, Jaleesa. You rode off Australia's World Cup chances, and we lift the title.
I know. Can you and I?
We lost her already. She found a quiet spot, but a spot with no internet.
Hi, like.
Sorry, we lost you. Go on again.
Oh, I said, well, you've got access to all our podcast library. Can you go and delete all of the things that you and I said?
Yes, please.
Just keep Paul.
On that, just hold on one sec, everyone.
You know, our T20 World Cup's guest.
That's a sample of what I've got.
Well, I didn't really hear that, but it's going really slow.
We couldn't hear it because you were breaking up, which was fantastic.
Yeah, the tech this morning is on overdrive.
Can you please?
Well, I checked with you beforehand, but would that work? And you said it would, and it didn't.
No, the internet cut out. It was the internet, not. I'm sure it played on your phone. I tried again. Go try once more. Try one more time.
Go again.
Well, I've got to get back to the right spot on the podcast now.
Yeah.
Here we go.
This is the first one. Can you hear that?
Style. And yeah, I'm annoyed. I mean, you know, our T20 World Cup's going to be a disaster. I'm already looking forward to the Ashes.
That was just a hint of it. Could you hear that?
Yes, I could.
Good. That was Menas from July. If I can
I could
be bothered.
Hear it wasn't me, so that's great.
Yeah, you're off the hook. It's Menas that I've got in my sights. If I can be bothered, before our next official episode of Cricket Unfiltered, I will put a compilation together of Menas death riding our chances. But I'm lazy, so 50-50.
I reckon you'll do it.
Jaleesa, how much of the World Cup final did you see? Because our little group chat went quiet for a couple of hours there. So did you sleep through most of it?
Our group chat was very quiet. Our group chat was very quiet because you guys were together. So I actually sent you a message saying the group chat's very quiet because there was no like banter that we usually have during these matches. But no, I watched all of it. I have to say, like, I loved that we won and but I did actually, if I'm being really honest with everyone, I actually enjoyed the game against Pakistan better. And maybe because I didn't rate our chances in that game as much as I rated against New Zealand. So, and it, obviously it came down to the wire too. So, like, you could sort of see that we were home and hosed for a fair way out in the New Zealand game, I felt. So, barring some drastic collapse, but yeah, I watched all of it. Love that we won, fantastic, but probably enjoyed in terms of a game, probably enjoyed Pakistan a much better game.
Although in the Pakistan game, I mean, you said you were supporting Pakistan, so that must have been disappointing to see your side lose.
I wasn't supporting Pakistan. I'm always supporting Australia, but I wasn't upset if Pakistan won.
Fair enough.
Like, oh, I wasn't actually, I know that says quietly, I wasn't that sad if we lost to New Zealand.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
I would have been.
I've taken cover.
I must admit it was Australia does have this habit of playing amazing semi-finals and then dominating the final. So yeah. Sort of followed on from that. But look, let's just sort of talk about some of the things to come out of it. I'm surprised that there's all of a sudden this chat that all of a sudden Justin Langer needs to be extended and he can be the coach for as long as he wants because he's won a World Cup. Didn't we find out with Darren Lehman when he was there that it's actually a really tough job and, you know, 4 or 5 years is a good sort of time period for a coach, regardless of results.
You're criticising Justin Langer. I would have thought that you'd be saying now he should be coach for life, you know, and president. What's going on?
I'm not criticising him. He did a great job. But I think, yeah, it's been proven that it's good to have new voices in there. It's a terribly tough job for the coach. They're away a lot. We saw what it did to Darren Lehman. And I'm just not sure that there's any value in him staying on much longer. I mean, it's time to move on. Nothing to do with his performance, just the nature of the job. What do you think, Jaleesa?
Well, I've been saying for a long time that I just want different coaches, perhaps not for ODI because we probably don't, although, you know, we could have a different coach for ODI, but I just think the T20 and the test side need different coaches because there's too many conflicting schedules to balance. I think it must be terribly hard for Justin Langer to be over there and not be thinking about the Ashes at the moment. So I think it would be unrealistic to think he probably hasn't been thinking about that, even if he hasn't been trying to think about that. So I just don't agree with having the same coach in all the formats. And I've been saying that for a while. And I really would hope that they would move away from that after.
Another great point by Jaleesa after.
The Langer is done.
Well, I agree with Jaleesa. I think that it's not ideal to have the same coach twice. If you look at the coming schedule and factor in what's already gone behind, that Langer has now had this World Cup. He's going to have the Ashes. There are multiple tours of the subcontinent ahead of another World Cup in Australia next year. If he was to be the white ball and red ball coach that whole time, it is just exhausting. So I agree. I kind of agree with both of you. I think that when it's time for his contract to end, Langer should move on. But at the very least, if he does stay on, it should only be in, you know, the capacity of either the red ball or the white ball.
Yeah, and Jaleesa, you brought up the coaching structure about dividing it. At points during our analysis of the World Cup when it looked like Australia was going to crash out, we were saying the whole thing needed to be changed, you know, separate squads, separate coaches. I wonder if the win here will allow them to kind of paper over the cracks and they'll just continue with this philosophy of wheel out your best players for the World Cups, hope they do well, and in between just pick whoever's available.
Well, it seems to be that we – sorry, I've just had a call coming through. I'll just ignore that.
That's good.
Am I back up? Yes, I am. It seems to be that we don't pick our best players. We just keep picking our test side, so which are our best players, I guess. But that was one thing that I – is a little disappointing.
What was that last thing you said? What was the last thing you said?
Hang on. I'm coming back. That was the one negative about winning this T20 World Cup, although I'm thrilled that we won and we needed to win a T20 World Cup, is it does give an excuse to keep doing what we've been doing because it obviously worked. And that was something that is a little disappointing because I would have liked to see a whole change in strategy where we do treat them as two different sides and we do pick our best T20 side and we start really using those specialised T20 players because there are specialised T20 players out there that will never make test players but that can play all the T20s, not just World Cups.
Yeah.
But I think that the Cricket Australia could argue that by default, that's kind of sort of happened, that going into the tournament, everyone was saying that Australia lacks middle order hitting power and everyone was saying, oh, but we've got these top order players who have been shoehorned into the middle order and that you need specialized finishers to bat, you know, 6 and 7. You can't just take players who normally bat at the top of the order and push them down. Well, once again, that's been proven wrong, that you can't suddenly say, oh, Stoinis and Wade can play in the middle order. They are suddenly middle order specialized hitters. No, they're the ones that all you pundits were saying they're top order players who have been shoehorned into the middle order. It's shown that your big belief that the difference between batting at the top of the order and the middle order is nowhere near as much as you might have thought. So I think that you can look at it and say, we are kind of heading towards the specialised side without actually trying. We've got Mitchell Marsh in as a specialised sort of power hitter at number three. We've got Stoinis and Wade who are in the middle order. As things stand, none of those three are in the test side. Aaron Finch isn't in the test side either. So as far as batting is concerned, we've almost got to that point that everyone said that we needed to get to by stealth rather than by an absolute change in design.
Do you feel like, Paul, we kind of accidentally stumbled on this? I don't feel confident that it was a grand plan. I feel they kind of stumbled onto this batting lineup to sort of fit everyone in. Matt Wade's performances meant they wanted to get him in, so they stuck him in at 7. And look, it worked out great. As you say, they've found two closers. But, I feel like it was sort of dumb luck almost.
Yeah, but it might have been that the pundits who are calling for the opposite were dumb as well. You know, what were they going to put Jono Wells in the middle order or something like some sort of...
No, but Dan Christian...
No, I'm not going to disagree with that. I'd still have him in there. He's my first player picked. But yeah. And I think he would have done. I certainly think he should still be in contention for the upcoming Australian World Cup. But they'd also argue that he wasn't far away either. I mean, he was in the extended squad for that World Cup. So, but in terms of going forward, are we going to say, right, well, if you're in the test side, then you're not really going to be considered for the World Cup because you're not going to play enough bilateral T20s. I don't think that I'd feel comfortable with that. I mean, at the end of the day, when you've got the choice of bringing David Warner back in, you're always going to bring him back in.
Yeah.
Jaleesa has dropped off, by the way. That's why
something Paul said upset her so much she left. Steve Smith had a quiet World Cup. We certainly could have lifted the trophy without him. Paul's frozen.
I got a call then. This is a nightmare. Am I back?
You are back.
Okay. I don't agree that we could have lifted it without Steve Smith necessarily because, when we beat, off the top of my head, the scores are a bit fuzzy, but when we beat West Indies, no, so when we beat South Africa right at the start, he played a handy little innings in that game, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. 20 odd, maybe.
Yeah. And it was at a crucial time when he came in and played that innings. And then he played another half decent innings in our, our victory over Sri Lanka as well. I mean, he didn't have a barnstorming World Cup by any means, but I still think that he played a fairly important role.
Okay.
Don't just cynically say okay and not have a comeback. Like you've either got to accept my point as valid or come back with something, not just sort of dismiss it with a tone.
Well, I mean, he played a handy couple of innings. Yeah. I think we probably could have won without him, but it's a hard question to argue because it's just a hypothetical. I more wanted to annoy you, which I successfully did. I'll tell you what annoyed me. You want some Mad Menace? Here's some bloody Mad Menace for all you viewers out there and everyone listening on the podcast feed. Sorry, there's been dropouts and stuff, but you know, that's part of live television. Wake up and I read this in the News Corp papers about Aaron Finch. His leadership is so highly regarded by Cricket Australia. Bosses have endorsed him for not only the T20 World Cup in Australia in 12 months' time, but also the 2023 ODI 50 over World Cup as well. I am stunned at this, Paul. When has Australian cricket ever guaranteed a spot to anybody for 2 years ahead, let alone someone whose form has been indifferent?
I've heard those reports. I haven't read them, but it sounds to me like I don't think that can be true. I mean, you can't guarantee someone a spot for 2023. What happens if he doesn't score a run between now and then? It's ridiculous exactly. To say. But B, if they have been given that impression, then I completely agree with you. Because, look, Aaron Finch, he's got a fantastic record at T20 international cricket. He is well-liked. I think he's a good leader. And if he performs, I'd be very happy. I'd love him to be our leader for those World Cups. I like him. I want him to do well. But in terms of the notion that he is such a good leader that can excuse his assumed by the basis of this argument that his batting form is not going to be so great going forward, that is nonsensical. Because apart from being affable and intelligent, what's he contributed tactically in this tournament had to be talked out of batting first in the semi-final.
Winning the toss, he was good at that one. I just stunned that they would even consider that. I actually thought that this would be the perfect swan song for him. Just retire now from international cricket. He won't get dropped. He goes out on his terms. He goes out with a World Cup title. Thanks for everybody leaving questions. We will get to them after.
We'll get to one right now. Just Stephen Matlock saying, Paul's a big fan on the value of captains, even if they aren't performing. No, that's 100% opposite. If I've given that impression, I withdraw that. I think that the value of the captaincy is vastly overstated, and if you just drew it out of a hat each game as to who would be the captain, it wouldn't make much of a difference. And so the main thing is batting performance.
Yeah, and I just think anybody with two eyes can see Finch looks a little short of where he was two or three years ago in international cricket, and that's no criticism. He's 35. He's had a great career, but I would almost think that the home World Cup next year is a bridge too far, but certainly the 50-over World Cup is way too far, and yeah, very stunned by that. As I said, I think he should just take this World Cup and ride off into the sunset.
No, I don't think he should do that. I think he should play on because you'd be mad.
No, I think that. I think that.
No, but play on, and they should pick him on his merits. And if he bats the house down between now and the next World Cup, you and I'll be the first people to want him in the side. If he doesn't, he should be dropped. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. I love the guy, but
good. Matlock confirms he's kidding. I'm kidding, mate. He's no Mike Brearley. Even Mike Brearley. Mike Brearley should never have played a test match. And they credit him for the 1981 Ashes win and all that sort of stuff. He averaged about 22 with the bat in test cricket, top score of about 90. He was a first grade player in Sydney. He wouldn't have played Shield. So you can have all the man management gibber you want. But yeah, he did seem like a good captain, Mike. Hello, if you're watching, Mike.
I disagree with Paul on this point, but I don't want to get stuck in the mud on this, especially not Mike Brearley.
40 years ago.
Yeah.
We've come to blows over Mike Brearley.
Yeah. Paul, quit show over Brearley Barney. I'm writing headlines. All right, so let's get into the Ashes chat. Jaleese is gone. That's, it's hard working with stars like her. Gets pulled away at the last minute. Before I get into the Ashes squad, the bad news is Will Pekowski is basically ruled out now of the Ashes. He's very unlikely to feature in the Ashes. He's not going to get any red ball cricket. George Bailey said on the radio yesterday that he just needs to see Pekowski playing cricket for a while now and unaffected by injury. So that's a big blow and a sad story, really, Paul.
Very sad. It's the saddest story of the summer so far. Everyone recognises his tremendous potential. You don't have he's played enough first-class cricket for his fine average of whatever it is, 53, to sound like it's a fair representation of how good he is. It would have been tremendously exciting for him to play. I suppose I know it's a different type of injury, but he can take heart and we can all take heart from Pat Cummins that for years it looked as though he would be forever injury prone and never really have a decent run at the top level. And then he's had about, what, 4 years, 5 years or whatever it is of completely uninterrupted success. He's on the verge of being Australia's captain. So Pekowski, he's still young enough to still have an excellent test career, but it is a concern about the concussion. Jaleesa's back. Hello.
Oh, my God. For the second time, I have run. Do you know what just happened? My colleague was ringing me. That's who was, like, ringing me, and I was, like, ignoring his calls. And then he sent me a message saying, your car's about to be towed.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was like, ah! So I just ran and then ran back up. And all I could think about the whole time was like, do you know what? The car being towed might be less of a problematic than Ben is yelling at me.
Oh, yeah. Look, I've already apologized to the listeners. And it is hard working with Divas, but Paul and I do our best.
Jaleesa, I'm 100% with Divas. You. Oh, you've shown Bradbury. It was me. I would have let my car get towed. I'd much rather face that than Menas. You're 100% right.
I parked so illegally because I'd been in an interview and I thought I cannot be late for Menas to lose his absolute mind. Parked super illegally, thinking I'll be fine. I'll just do this and then I'll come and move it. Oh my gosh, my heart.
So you must have got it. Like, did you get a $200 ticket?
No, that's what they're about. My colleague was literally out there being like, I'll get her to like come, like blah blah blah. See, like, God bless him.
Did he say she's doing a major media interview? She cannot be disturbed.
Yeah, and then he was like trying to call me, and I was ignoring his calls. So apologies to him and God bless him.
All right, I'll pick up. I just asked Paul, you know, about the situation around Will Pekowski. Obviously, he's going to miss the summer now. It's a sad story, isn't it, Jaleesa?
Yeah, it is a really sad story, and it's just a shame to see how he did go last summer. You feel like if he didn't have those concussion problems, everything else was aligned. He was ready to go, and he was mentally ready to go, and physically had obviously proven himself. And it's just so sad to see somebody's career, you know, take a hit like this. And I still have hope that he could bounce back from it. And he also is very mature in the way that he deals with these things. Like, we've seen him before say that he's not been right and ruled himself out. So he knows his own limitations. So I'm sure that if there's a chance that he can come back and he'll do that. And I hope that is the case. And it obviously does leave that opener spot a little bit up in the air. And it seems like Harris has got the shoe in, which I really just, with all respect to Harris, don't agree with. I still think Khawaja is in much better form and he would be my pick. So, yeah, what about you guys? Who would you want?
I intended to agree with you, and today I got Marcus Harris's numbers ahead of me so that I could bag the hell out of him. But having seen them, I've actually turned around. His numbers have convinced me, and I feel awkward saying that, but if I'm going to go by the numbers, I have to live and die by them. If you look at his overall record, it's modest. He's got the 10 test matches that he's played, he only averages... where's it gone now? Gosh.
20-odd something.
Yeah.
Low 20s.
Yes, 27 or whatever it is. I've had all these numbers here and they've all gone. It's a bit disappointing. But in,
I hate facts, Paul.
I know. His first class average is just under 40. So we can call it 40 in terms of to the nearest number. But if you look at his career from 2010-11 to 2015-16, he averaged 29. I think that was the point at which he made the move to Melbourne. Since then, He's now played 130 innings since moving to Melbourne, and he averages 46. And his averages in the last few summers are 56, 34, 39, 51, 54, and 37. It's not absolutely batting the house down, but an average of 46 over a protracted period of time is enough for me to say I can't criticise them picking him. He's not necessarily the one that I think is going to dominate Test cricket in years to come. But with those numbers on the board, I can see why they do pick him.
The one that got me more was that after the World Cup, and I don't know, apologies if you've already discussed this, was the chat around Mitch Marsh.
We haven't.
For the test side. Oh, blew my mind. Like, with, I'm the biggest Mitch Marsh and Sean Marsh advocate. I really like them. I've never been on the hate train, but I just could not get on board with this. A really solid World Cup from him, and he did great. And he actually missed a few Shield games to be able to prepare for a few Red Bull games to prepare to for that World Cup. But that does not translate to being in test form. And it would just set him up to be criticised again. I just couldn't get on board with that. And thank goodness that it looks like they haven't. I mean, I just, but it was funny when I actually put that out there. And I actually said Sean Abbott, I really like as a bowling all-rounder, particularly if we're going to do this whole rotation thing again. I think Sean Abbott should get his shot. I think Cameron Green should hold on to his spot, but if we're going to sort of bring someone else in during the series. But I couldn't believe some of the responses I got were, oh, there's already too many New South Wales players in the team.
Tim Gossage. Tim Gossage.
Too many New South Wales. What?
Yeah, I don't want to criticise Tim Gossage for being parochial because I can be one-eyed at times. But, yeah, Tim Gossage, former Channel 10 presenter. I think he got the axe from them. He's now on SCN Radio. I did reply to that one.
It wasn't just him. About, it was a lot.
Yeah. I just cannot believe, you know, reasonable cricket minds were advocating for Mitch Marsh. I think I heard Kerry O'Keefe on the back page on Tuesday night, a Fox Sports show, saying he thinks Marsh is a might be a good option for the Ashes. And Kerry O'Keefe is normally very astute, but I was stunned. Like you, Jaleesa, T20 form does not translate into test form. How could you ever have Cameron Green at 5 and Mitch Marsh at 6? It would just be, I mean, poor Cameron Green, he goes out and he thinks, well, the tail starts at 6, one behind me.
One point on that, any Australian who is parochial around who gets picked for the national side, it blows my mind. If they never picked a player from New South Wales again, as long as they picked the best 11, I couldn't care less. I have no interest in whether someone is from Hobart or Karratha, from Cairns or Bunbury or anywhere in between. Just pick the best side. And the notion that, and I even heard it on Jared Waitley's show the other week, and I think he's the best broadcaster going around, but he sort of said how he felt that maybe Victorians weren't parochial enough in pushing the claims for Victorian players. And I thought, are you bonkers? I mean, New South Wales is the only state that is not parochial. We care about Australia. I mean, I like New South Wales to win in the Sheffield Shield, sure, but I care about Australia winning 100 billion times more. And I still remember the first time when I was at the MCG and Brad Hodge came out to bat. And I think maybe it was the first time that a sort of an obscure Victorian, not that he was obscure, but he was making his way, had played when I'd been at the MCG. And he got the biggest roar of the day. The crowd went berserk when he came out to bat. And after he came, then there's like, we love you because you're a Victorian, went on and on, round and round the ground. He got a much larger cheer than any other player. That would never happen in Sydney. In Sydney, they will cheer the players maybe slightly more because they're New South Wales, but not much. So people from Western Australia thinking, oh, there are too many players from New South Wales in the side. Grow up. We want to win. Yeah. We want to pick the best side. And who cares where they're from in the country? It drives me mental, that.
Yeah, and, you know, let's look at the best bowlers and the best batsmen in the world. Like,
exactly.
They are from New South Wales. That's just unfortunate.
We have a third of the population. We have a third of the population, so it stands to reason that we're going to, and as often Victorian potential fast bowlers end up playing Australian rules football because there's such a strong crossover in body type, whereas rugby league and cricket, there's not the same crossover. There's so many, you know, I always go back to Shane Warne. Had he been an inch taller and a metre faster, he'd have had a middling career playing for St Kilda rather than playing for Australian cricket. So, yeah, that's berserk. Now, in terms of Mitch Marsh, you might be surprised by me here, but I wouldn't pick him. But I'm absolutely fine with them choosing a side based on, to some degree, white ball form, because I want them to pick the best 11 players. And if you are in the best 11 players, then you should be in the side. I don't think Mitch Marsh is in the best 11, so I wouldn't pick him. But I certainly do think that his white ball form in recent times has shown that he has improved as a player. So I'm happy that he has been picked in the Australian A side. I would like to see him score some red ball runs for sure. And his test record is very, very modest. I mean, it's the most modest of any player that's played a substantial amount of cricket for Australia of all time, maybe with the exception of a few long-standing off-spinners. But to have a batting average of 25 after 32 tests and a bowling average of 38, that's why I wouldn't have him picked. But he has definitely improved. So if he can show that improvement is not a flash in the pan, I would be happy for him to be in the test side in the coming tours of the subcontinent. I could see him doing a good job. And if he is good enough to be in the side, then there's no problem with him at five and Green at six. As long as, you know, you pick your best six batters, and if they are in there, then, you know, so be it. I see that Shield Berry from the Telegraph has said that Cameron Green is batting a spot too high at number six. And I think he's just looked at his test average of 33 and hasn't realised that he's got a first-class average in the 50s. And Greg Chappell said he's the best prospect since Ricky Ponting. So, yeah, I've got off my long run there. I've finished
Mad
my
Dennett. Speech now. Madman Dennett. I actually disagree with Berry there. I think Green's batting too low. He's actually, the way he bats like a top-order batter. All right, so the Ashes squad.
Why did you have to say actually? I was disagreeing with him as well. When you said no, actually, you implied that I was agreeing with him.
No, I was implying that I actually disagree with Berry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's such disagree with him too.
Yeah, but he's such an esteemed writer. I'm saying okay. I disagree all with right. him. Yeah. Not everything's about you, Paul.
No, it is, but so, when I make a statement and you reply, it tends to be about me. You know, if you say, hello, how are you? And I say, good. You say, I don't care. You did ask.
I wasn't listening anyway to most
fair
of what
enough.
You said.
I thought so. Now I accept that.
So the squad was announced. No Mitch Marsh, no Glenn Maxwell, no Matt Wade. They've announced an Australia A squad, but George Bailey has been very clear that the Australia A v Australia match is not a trial match. They've got a fair idea of who they want to pick. It's just for preparation. So I really like that. I think it puts too much pressure on the player saying, I will play this one game and if you score runs, you're in. So Marcus Harris wanted
the entertainment factor. I wish that wasn't the case.
It's great for a journo like you.
Whoever scores is in.
Yeah, exactly.
It still will be to an extent, I think, between Head and Khawaja.
Maybe. I mean, George Bailey said on the radio they've got a pretty good idea of who they're going to pick. I'm curious how that's going to work out. I'm not sure. So the other question, they've got Harris and Warner penciled into open. They've got Marnus at three, Smith at four. And then, five is now seems a battle between Head and Khawaja. Jaleesa, who would you pick?
Khawaja. He's just in form at the moment, and he's in, especially at the Gabba, starting off at the Gabba. I think, that's his home ground. I think he's just in form at the moment. He's done enough to prove that. I think Khawaja, a lot of times has missed out unfairly. So, Khawaja for me.
Paul, for you?
Maxwell.
Okay.
No, but I'm serious.
Who would you pick from the squad between Head and Khawaja?
I'll get to that. You think that I will get to that. What I'm saying is this: for those who say that you can't pick on white ball form, yet they have put Mitch Marsh into the Australian A form team on white ball form, isn't that a slap in the face to Maxwell that his white ball form has been supreme? Whenever he gets a chance at red ball form, he's no worse than any of the others. He bowls, he's aggressive. If they've said, look, you're not going to play in the Ashes this year, so there's no point going to Brisbane. We know what you can do. Have a rest. That's fine. But if it shows that he's well out of their calculations, then I find that disappointing. If I couldn't have Maxwell, I'd have Maddinson. I think that he's a better option. But then if it's down between Khawaja and Head, I don't know. At this stage, I'm not sure. I'm reserving my judgment on that. Maybe stay tuned to the next Cricket Unfiltered and I'll give you my unvarnished opinion on that. So if that's arisen to tune into the show, if nothing else.
I agree about Maxwell. I don't know what he's done wrong. And I think Nick Maddinson would have been a great option for the test squad, but he's not there. I'm actually leaning towards one Travis Head. If Khawaja is not opening, then I would probably prefer Head in the middle order. I think he's got a bigger future, and he's done well in the middle order in the past. Not much in it, though. I really think they both average about 40 in Test cricket. I think they'll both do a similar kind of job. I'm more comfortable with Khawaja opening instead of Harris. That's actually my preferred role for him.
Same.
So, unfortunately, if they're not going to do that, then it might be no Usman this Test match.
Had it been this, had we recorded this yesterday, I'd have been agreeing until I looked at Harris's numbers in detail. So, I also think it's a bit harsh on Matt Wade that is he not in the top 22 Australian players? The notion that he was tried and found wanting, so therefore we've dispensed with him. I don't like that. I think that that certainly he played pretty well over there in the World Cup. He's still got plenty to offer. Look at someone like Bryce Street, and I know he's an opening batter, so therefore it's illegal to compare the two, but I will. He's played three seasons now, averaging in the sort of 30s, high 30s each season with a very low strike rate. Obviously a good grinding player and maybe has some upside, but, you know, I'd pick Wade over him in the Test side if they were being chosen tomorrow. The other one that's interesting is Henry Hunt being picked in the Australian A side. He's not someone that is really on the radar very much, but his first season he's had three seasons in first-class cricket. Now, his first one, he averaged 29. His second one, he averaged 45. And this season, he's averaging 57. So a very small sample size, but could be a player of the future.
To be honest, if I'm a player that's coming back from the World Cup and I can only play Australia A and there's no prospect of me cracking that Ashes side, I don't want to play. I just want to rest.
I agree. Yeah. But I suppose it shows that we have got a year of a fairly extensive tours to the subcontinent. If you have your eye on that, then maybe that would be worth playing. But I know what you mean. I'd want to rest as well.
You'd be a Hunt fan, Jaleesa. He's from Cowra, another Western New South Wales boy.
Yeah. I love you know what really annoys me every time that they say Nathan Lyon's from Canberra? No, he's not. He's from Young. It's 20
yes.
minutes from Borua.
So that's the thing. Go back to all these people being so parochial. Half the people that are from other states are from New South Wales. Anyway, Bryce Street was born in Gosford. Like, I don't know how long he stayed in Gosford, but you know, Dan Christian, who everyone assumes is South Australian, grew up in Sydney. Like, you know, I probably who's the most famous person who's not from New South Wales in Australian cricket history? Shane
Warne.
I bet he grew up in Sydney. Yeah, Alan Border. Yeah.
Don Bradman.
Yes, I bet Don Bradman didn't grow up in Adelaide.
Yeah,
that's a joke to
all righty. The other debate they're talking about is the third quick. So it seems like Hazelwood and Cummins are penned in for that first test, barring any injury. And then there seems to be a real push to get Jai Richardson into the side, maybe ahead of Mitch Stark. There's been a lot of talk about a spell in a Shield match at the Gabba last week where he was apparently on fire. And he seems to be in great rhythm. And he's seen as someone that's like for Stark. Interesting, I was hearing Pat Cummins talk in a press conference yesterday. And Nisa seems to be viewed as someone who can bowl like Cummins and Hazelwood, whereas Richardson seems to be more your Stark, quick, enforcer type. So, yeah, well, I guess, Jaleesa, any preference for you in that first test?
I would still hold on to Mitchell Stark. I think that he's just got that little bit of variety that Hazelwood and Cummins don't have, and especially in that first test, I think you want to keep the quicks that we've had going so well, so solidly, and in the World Cup. I know Mitch Stark was, you know, pretty average in that last game, but up until that point he'd been quite good, and I think just keeping that unit together, the way that they've worked together for so long and know each other's strengths and know how to play each other is beneficial. I wouldn't go changing the side.
Well, big call. Jaleesa's back to Stark.
I'd pick Richardson for the first test in place of Stark. Stark's you know, he's a fine bowler, good record, but I think it's time. I think it's Richardson's time. You look at he's only played 20 first class games because of all the injuries that he's had, but he's 25. He's taken 83 wickets at an average of 21.6. That's sort of McGrath figures. His strike rate, which is 48.4, that's at Stark levels, and Stark is famous for his fantastic strike rate. You just look at Richardson's career, which has been interrupted by injury. He took four wickets in 2015-16 at an average of 23. Then he took He didn't play again for a couple of seasons, averaged 29.5. But then 2018-19, he averaged 19.3. 2019-20, he averaged 27. Didn't play last season. And this season so far, he's averaging 12.5. Compare that to Stark. Last season is the concern. He averaged 44.6. I think that Stark is not finished, and I think he's certainly someone I'd be looking to pick in the pink ball test in Adelaide. But I think for the first test of the summer, at the moment, I'd be picking Richardson above him.
The only thing that I think is a little bit of a trap sometimes is that we look at, say, Richardson's been doing really well this summer, but if Mitch Stark had been playing Shield this summer, I think that he would have been doing just as well. Like, it's not sort of like for like.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but he wasn't, and he was playing Shield last summer.
We're comparing right now. We're comparing the form at the moment. We're comparing him playing against the best, you know, T20 sides in the world compared to, you know, Richardson's playing against Sheffield Shield players.
Yeah, but I'm sort of saying more what Stark did last summer, that he averaged in the mid 40s across, and that's not just Test matches. That's Sheffield Shield as well. So you're right. You've got to factor that in. But I think even factoring that in, if I had to make a judgment call, I think that first class average of 21 versus Mitchell Stark's overall first class average of 28 or whatever else, albeit achieved mainly against higher standard, I think that's enough to say that I'm going to give the 25-year-old the nod over the 32-year-old. But as I said, certainly considering bringing Stark back for the second test.
I'm just not confident in Stark maintaining rhythm for a long period of time. He might be able to come good for a couple of spells in a test match. So I'm kind of leaning towards Paul, maybe giving Jai Richardson the first test match. Richardson made his test debut there against Sri Lanka in a pink ball match and took 5 wickets. So he's done well on that ground. But there's not much in it. If Stark comes out in the Australia A, Australia game and looks to be in terrific rhythm, then, maybe he gets the first nod. But I think the thing is, you're right, I think Stark has to play in Adelaide. So do you bring Richo in for one test match and then swap him out for the next?
I think you pick your best side and then worry about the future when it happens. I mean, if Richardson plays and takes 10 wickets, then maybe Stark doesn't come in for Adelaide. He's a fine pink ball bowler, but doesn't mean he has to play. And I notice here someone's written Paul Bingo Card Time, and I was about to say, oh, come on. And then I realized it's Cricket Unfiltered's written that. Men is just sledging me. You're talking to me and you're commenting.
It was just when you were going on about the Maxwell stuff. I know people were, you know, it was they're waiting for the batting order one. So they're just going through the Paul tropes.
And the Menes tropes of Australia's got no chance at the World Cup, though. I'm sure they had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie to you. I've received a few messages in the last few days. All right. Now, look, any more stuff on the Ashes points, then we'll just go through all the listener questions and wrap it up. But any more points, you two?
No.
Okay, great. All right. First question. Matlock Stephen, unfortunately, no Maxwell in the squad, Paul. Surely he'll get a run in Pakistan. Unfortunately not. He's due to get married when that tour takes place. So he may be completely... Apparently not. Apparently he's moved it twice. In the press conference, I heard
he can't move it three times.
No, I think he said he's not going to. So
I think if you can move it twice, you can move it three times.
Why would you move it? So you move your wedding, you spend months moving it, and then a week before the tour, Cricket Australia releases a press release. DFAT have said we can't go.
You'd be filthy if that happened.
In all seriousness, though, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He is such a talented player. If they were considering him for the Pakistan tour, it's obviously up to him and up to his fiancée to decide what to do. But if I was getting married to someone doing that, I would say, I refuse to marry you if it means you miss the February tour. You are going on that tour. I'm not being funny. I'm not trying to be funny.
I agree with you.
And I would say this no matter what it was, if it was an opportunity in any field of life, if I was marrying someone and they had this career opportunity, even if we had postponed it twice and it was a nightmare and everything else, I would say under no circumstances am I going to marry you if it's going to mean you're going to miss this Pakistan tour. You are such a wonderful player. You have an opportunity to have a test career. that's the life-defining thing for you. Maxwell could still, if they picked him, he could play 3 or 4 years of Test cricket, finish up with an average of 45, take a few wickets, and go down as one of Australia's really, you know, top echelon all-format players. Plus the money that they would make as a result of it as well. It's obviously their call, not mine, but I wouldn't be marrying him in February. I'd be saying, don't you dare get married in February. Go and play for Australia.
Well, first of all, I don't want to blame his poor fiancée. It's his decision as well.
So. I'm not blaming. I don't even know who she is. I'm just saying.
But also, well, I usually take the same stance, Paul, is that babies, I think, why on earth would you be going to a test match over a baby? But marriages, I think, can be. But we don't know what's going on in there. There might be reasons that they want to get married quicker than, you know, there might be stuff in the background. They won't want relatives that are maybe overseas, or there's some reason why their wedding can't be postponed. So I don't want to be too critical of them, but I take your point.
I suppose I'm speaking in my, like, in the general sense. I agree. I don't know their circumstances, but in the general sense, if it was me and my potential partner had an opportunity to whatever, I would say no, take the opportunity. Get married at the registry office and we'll have a wonderful
maybe
ceremony.
She's saying that and he's going, no, I really want the party.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But she should stand up to him and say, I'm not going to marry a person with that poor judgment.
Stephen Matlock, who's the next Aussie coach then if Langer bows out? I've got two names for you. I'm thinking Andrew McDonald, the current assistant coach. He's a very respected coach. And the other one is Jason Gillespie. I'd like to see him given a chance.
Oh, I'd you love too? Jason Gillespie. That would be great. But I agree with you. I think Andrew McDonald is sort of being primed for that role.
I think Jason Gillespie's probably been fairly or unfairly, a little bit tarnished by how poor South Australia have been going, that that they would find it hard to pick him on that basis. I think that Trevor Bayliss for the white ball, maybe, and Andrew McDonald for the red ball is possibly what will happen.
Yeah, that's a good structure as well. I know Bayliss said he only wants to coach Australia. Suraj Ray, are you seeing rest and rotation policy in quick bowling lineups so that they don't get burnt out as it's a long test summer, like what happened in the India series last year? It's a really good question. The feeling I'm getting and what Bailey seems to be teasing is that we won't see the same three quicks throughout the summer. And I would even go one step further, and I would actually not be guaranteeing Lyon will make it to the fifth test.
I agree with that. I think that they'll be very reluctant to drop Lyon, but his performances last season were disappointing, so we're going to need to see something from him. And they will be very reluctant to have what happened where Stark especially ran out of juice coming into the final test match. I think we will see a bit of rest and rotation.
Yeah, I think the final test, just we did look very tired and very not creative, and he sort of had run out of things to do. But I actually think Lyon's going to have a really big summer. I think he'll bounce back from the last summer, particularly because he's been the only one in Australia actually preparing with red ball. So I think he's going to be really big.
Excellent. Last question, Jacob Sturges. If you pick Head as a middle order bat, should he bat at 6 and Green at 5? I like that one. I think that's
a good
setup.
I think they should alternate.
Okay, bingo card again, Paul. Bingo.
I think the Green is, I think Green should be as far up as you can put him. I agree with you, Menace. He sort of bats a bit more like a top order.
He's very straight. Alrighty, fantastic stuff. Thanks everybody that's listened. Jaleesa, what's news? What's on?
Well, I went to the Tim Zoo fight last night, so I'm wrapping all that up. Sorry, I only replied to your messages this morning.
That's okay.
Did it look like a knockout for a while? Because as I said it to you guys, I had money on Zoo to win him by decision, which I was very happy with.
And so you had money on Zoo?
To win by decision.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I thought it was gonna be a knockout, just given Tim Zoo's history, but good for you, Paul.
Yeah, it was my dad who gave me the tip. So it was.
Dad's got some good betting. I've been giving all the credit to you, but I'm starting to think it's Dad.
He's the best. He's the best.
What's your dad's first name?
Len.
No, we need Len on the show for some tips.
Len is the best punter. Len is the best punter in Australia, and I'm trying to emulate him, but not yet there.
Beauty. Jaleesi, do you think we'll be able to catch up next week in studio? How's your schedule looking?
Potentially in the evening. Yep.
Great.
I can't do any of the daytimes because I have a job, but evening could be good.
Excellent. Well, it'll be great to see you in person. Paul, excellent work as always. What have you got on cricket-wise? You're commentating on Sunday.
I am.
Yeah, in the grade cricket T20, although there's about 25 mils of rain forecast, so I'm currently learning all about the players, and it'll be disappointing if I never get to put that knowledge to use.
Beautiful stuff. All right, everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Cricket Unfiltered. We'll be back next week.
See ya.
Bye.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.